Welcome to Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Here's your host, Dr. Parr Donahue.
Welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. Our subject today, COVID-19 vaccines, you and your family. Our guest expert is Dr. Catherine Edwards. I'll introduce her in a moment, but first my monologue. What a world we live in. For most of a year, people worldwide waited and prayed for an end to the COVID virus pandemic. Then it came in the form of vaccine. Concerned citizens everywhere waited in line to get an appointment for their shots. When the first shot was in our arms, we celebrated. Yet we waited in angst for number two. Now we are protected. No, wait 7 to 10 days before we can celebrate again. Eventually, and never soon enough, our time came. And now we hear that many are refusing to get immunized. Really? What happened? You say the vaccine hasn't been tested enough. Hey, wait a minute. It was approved by the stringent FDA and hundreds of millions of doses have been administered safely. Think about it. How can 30 to 40% of our people really have more knowledge of immunization safety than the FDA? Really? I remember in the 1950s, yes, I'm old enough, we were kids and our aunt, only 25 years old, and the mother of one of our favorite cousins got polio. We were horrified. She spent months in an iron lung. We saw pictures of her in this glass barrel. How awful. Somehow we were allowed to visit her in the hospital and saw the iron lung. This, of course, after we had been vaccinated with the new vaccine. How incredibly we were blessed. Our dear aunt never walked again, but she felt lucky and spent the next 50 years in a wheelchair. Fortunately, her faithful husband took great care of her. We waited in long lines, not once, not twice, but three times to get the vaccine. Now, I don't know of anyone who refused it, but I was a kid, so I probably didn't know everything that was happening. In the end, the pandemic ended, and now polio is all but eradicated from the face of the earth. How wonderful is science? How wonderful, but this wonder is lost if we don't believe. So today, to answer all of our questions about the COVID-19 vaccines, I have asked Dr. Catherine Edwards to be our guest. I met Dr. Edwards some 25 years ago at a pediatric meeting in the Smoky Mountains, a beautiful place to rest and learn. Last month, I contacted her and asked her to be our guest. Here is what she said in reply. You're a pediatrician, right? We met at a meeting, I believe it was in Gatlinburg, right? How is that for a memory? Wouldn't we all like to have a memory like that? Well, Dr. Catherine J. Edwards, MD, is the Sarah H. Sell Professor of Pediatrics and the Cornelius Vanderbilt Chair and Scientific Director of Vanderbilt Vaccine Research Program. Dr. Edwards received her medical degree from the University of Iowa College of Medicine, did her pediatric residency and infectious disease fellowship at Northwestern University in Chicago, and is an internationally recognized expert in vaccinology. The National Foundation for Infectious Disease gave her the Maxwell Finlay Award for Scientific Achievements in 2018. This annual award is presented to outstanding individuals who have made significant and lasting contributions to public health. The American Pediatric Society in 2020 granted her the John Holland Award, which is the highest award bestowed by that organization and signifies the society's recognition of Dr. Edwards' significant contributions to advancing child's health in the profession of pediatrics. Dr. Edwards is currently working with the CDC to address adverse events after immunization. Her focus is on the evaluation of vaccines for the prevention of infectious disease in adults and children. She also conducts active population-based surveillance to monitor the impact of new vaccines on the disease burden. So in summary, she has published many scientific papers that have saved many, many lives. congratulations and thank you, Dr. Edwards, for all you have done for pediatrics, for families, and for the world. And welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here as well.
You and Vanderbilt Medical Center have been involved in the development of these vaccines. What was your role?
Well, I think that there's been a number of different parts to this story, and some of the parts have been people working in the laboratory on the vaccine. Some of the parts have been people testing it in people. My part has been making sure that it's safe and understanding any kind of side effects. And other people's part has been educating the public. So it's really been a multifaceted aspect, and we're all very excited about the vaccines being here and the impact that they can make on this terrible pandemic.
I guess, once again, no man is an island, nor is a woman, right?
That's right.
But wasn't some of your work funded by Dolly Parton?
Yeah, Dolly Parton gave Vanderbilt Medical Center $1 million, and her money was used to develop some testing for them, one of the mRNA vaccines. She's also been, her funding is also used as to help understand the burden of the pandemic in children as well. And so we were incredibly happy about her generosity, and it's really been important.
Let's make you so proud of Dolly and of Vanderbilt and Nashville and of you. So thank you once again.
Thank you.
Are these vaccines the reason the number of cases and the death rates have begun to fall?
I think that if we begin to look at at the numbers of severely ill people and the death rates, there are a couple things that are pretty prominent. One is that the large number of older people, people over 75 and 80, and people who live in extended care facilities, the number of people that are dying in those groups are really, really down. There's hardly any. And so it really tells us that as we have focused our vaccination efforts on those older people, that the vaccines have been delivered and that they are working and they are preventing hospitalizations and deaths. And deaths in those individuals. I think one of the challenges that we have is obviously delivering the vaccine to all of our people, and that's a big challenge. The other thing is that sometimes when we are young and we don't think that diseases affect us. And I think that the older people, we've all been really worried and really glad to be vaccinated so we can see our families again. But some of the younger people are not as afraid. They think that, well, they're healthy and they'll be just fine. But we do know that there are previously healthy people with no underlying conditions that are of various ages that can get very sick and die. So I think that's one of the problems that people have to understand what their risk is, and then also weigh that in the very, very small risk of any kind of adverse side effects from the vaccines.
Yes, very much so. Could you explain how the COVID vaccine by Pfizer, for example, differs from the traditional vaccines?
Sure. Well, we've been doing studies with this particular kind of vaccine for about a decade, but we've never put it into large numbers of people before. But what the mRNA vaccines are, the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine, is that they take a tiny little piece of the message to called mRNA, or the instructions to make a protein. And that protein is called the spike protein. And so that when you inject the vaccine, which is covered in a lipid protective area, these instructions go into the muscle and it tells how to make this protein, and the protein is made, and then you make antibody to fight that. So it's really just kind of an instruction package on how to make this tiny little protein. It doesn't make the whole virus. It doesn't make you get infected with COVID. It's only one little protein as part of the virus.
So, and then that protein that you inject is destroyed, is that correct?
Then the antibody is made to the protein. Your body makes up something to attack that protein. And what actually happens then is with this antibody that you have in your blood, it actually blocks infection with COVID. So it actually sees the COVID virus, it sits on it and says, you're not going to attack. So that's what happens, is that you prevent the infection from occurring once you've been vaccinated.
So in summary, could I say that there's no poison in the vaccine? There's no foreign DNA in the vaccine. There's no chip that allows Martians to get inside our brain. There's nothing in there that can hurt us.
No, there is just a tiny little piece of instructions to make the protein, and it's covered by a lipid. But there's no DNA. It doesn't get into your cells. It doesn't change you. It just tells you how to make antibody or this protein to make antibody to the protein.
That's
so it's pretty simple. And we probably will be using it for other kinds of things in the future as well.
Well, I'm bothered, and I'm sure you are too, by the 50% of Marines who refused the vaccine. I just can't get my hands around that. And now we'll see some reports from the J&J vaccine and from, I think, from one of the other ones too. Yes, that there's clotting. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? Is it worse than the number of people who have clots from oral contraceptives or from smoking cigarettes?
So what has been seen in a very, very small number of people that have either got the AstraZeneca vaccine in Europe or the J&J vaccine in the United States has been the development of clots and some clots in the brain. At this time, there are reports of 6 cases in all of the 190, well, it's about 7,000 people that have gotten the J&J. So it's about 1 in 1,000,000 that we have seen with the J&J vaccine. So it's not very common. And we know that one of the big problems with the COVID infection, the virus, is that it causes a lot of clots. So blood clotting with the infection of COVID is very common. Blood clots, throughout the body. So the risk of getting blood clots from getting COVID is much greater than the risk of getting blood clots with the vaccine. But we want to make the vaccine as safe as possible. And we know that in this rare instance where this happens, that we need to treat it slightly differently. We don't give what we call heparin or blood thinner. We give another medicine. So it's been important for people and doctors to know about that. If they see this side effect, then to treat it in a different manner. But overall, the rate of clots in COVID is much, much, much greater than it is with the vaccine.
So we've actually saved hundreds and thousands of lives with that vaccine already.
Yes. And I think that benefit will continue to be seen as more people get vaccinated.
Good. Last week I was talking to a lady whose daughter was recovering from the vaccine. And the daughter was a young lady in her 20s. And she said that the obstetrician, the GYN doctor who took care of her part-time with the infectious disease person, the doctor said that if she was going to have any plan to have any children, she shouldn't get the vaccine because she would probably get abnormal children. How do they come up with theories like that?
Well, the internet does not refuse material. And unfortunately, the internet filtering system doesn't filter out things which are not correct. So there are no data that show that there's any adverse event with the vaccines with pregnancy. In fact, we have been looking very, very carefully with a lot of the pregnant women that have been getting vaccines. And there will be a article coming out very soon that says that there have been no adverse events that have been noticed in the pregnant women. There have been no adverse events noted in their babies. And there's absolutely no support that there's anything that the vaccine will lead to sterility. So no, that is not correct.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And just couldn't imagine it could be a side effect. We've also heard reports about this post-infectious syndrome, this multi-system inflammatory syndrome. What is that and what can you tell us about it?
So when children were infected in Europe, and many of them weren't very sick at all, it was noticed that about 2 months after some of the children that had COVID who had not been sick, they would develop this an illness that looked a little bit like what we call Kawasaki, which is an illness with high fever and red eyes and rash and some heart problems. And so what we saw then, and this was after disease, not after vaccine, that 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 this happened quite uncommonly, but then we also began to notice that it happened in the U.S. too when children were infected. So it's a very uncommon complication associated with COVID disease. When children are promptly diagnosed, they're brought to the hospital and they're given medications which will decrease the inflammation and also help their hearts. And so they really do very well. So if it's diagnosed quickly, it's really not a fatal disease. It's a treatable disease. But we don't know why some kids who've had COVID get this. It's called multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children, MISC. And so we're trying to better understand who gets that and who and how to predict that it might happen. But again, it's another one of the complications of disease.
Well, is that different than the acute respiratory distress syndrome that sometimes occurs?
Yeah, this isn't seen quite as commonly in adults. It's more commonly seen in children. And most of the time, there's not a lot of lung involvement in this MISC.
Are there other preposterous stories about the side effects that you might want to put out of our minds?
One of the things people do have to understand is that these vaccines do have a punch. And so particularly for younger people and particularly for women. So often when the time that you get the second dose of the vaccine, you may feel tired. I felt tired. I felt a little feverish. I just wasn't my usual get up and go self. And that lasted for about 24 to 48 hours. And so the vaccines do have some side effects that we do expect. And we feel that probably those side effects are just a sign that our immune system is working and working well because we need it to work well to prevent this disease. So that is one of the things that you see. I think that the other thing that we have to always think about is that things that happen after something don't mean always that they're causative. And I think when I talk to the medical students, I tell a story that several years ago, one of our wonderful pediatricians in the community was running late, and she just was a wonderful to be seen and to be vaccinated in the waiting room. The child had a seizure. If indeed she had been on time, the child would have been seen, would have had a vaccine, and would have had a seizure after that. So I think that's one of the really hard parts about those of us who work on understanding reactions is, are they causative? Would this have happened anyway? We know that, you know, people that are in their 70s and 80s have heart attacks. And just because they have a heart attack, you know, several days after vaccine, does that mean it was because of the vaccine? And so that's one of the things that's really hard and we look at very carefully and try and understand. But whether something is causative is sometimes hard to know.
I saw an article in the American Journal about OBGYN last month, and it showed that women who were pregnant and lactating when they had the vaccine, they induced more antibodies than the general public. So it got me thinking that shouldn't every pregnant woman be vaccinated during the pregnancy?
Well, I think that's certainly what the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology and all has said, is that there are no data that suggests you shouldn't, that it's harmful in any way. And, you know, one of the things that we in pediatrics and OB have been doing more recently is immunizing mothers so that they can deliver antibody to their babies. And we know that babies are really, really good at getting mother's antibody. And in fact, they're so good at getting their mother's antibody. And sometimes their antibody in the babies that they've gotten from their mothers are higher than in their mothers. So that is one thing that we could say, is if indeed the mothers were immunized during pregnancy and the breast milk would have antibodies. And then also when they were delivered, they also would get the antibody from the placenta. So it's what we call a twofer. You're kind of getting, you're vaccinating someone and vaccinating one person, but you're really getting the benefit for two people, the baby and the mother.
Sure. Dr. Edwards, I'm sort of bothered because they say, well, I had my two shots and Mary and my wife both just celebrated when we got our second shot. We didn't have any headache or anything else. We were energized and liberated. We were let out of jail. We were so excited. But when can we stop wearing masks and stop doing all this? Why do we have, if we get immunity, why do we have to be protecting ourselves?
Well, you know, the vaccines are 95% effective, which is pretty darn good. I mean, that's about, you know, that's kind of like measles. They're not 100%, you know, so that would be one issue. And certainly if 95% of the population were vaccinated, that would be another story as well. So I think that we want to protect others from it. We want to protect from getting, you know, the infection. And most all of the data that we have suggests that even if you get COVID and you've been vaccinated, that you don't get very sick, that you don't go to the hospital, and you certainly don't die. So I think those are important things. One of the things that, you know, I have been studying respiratory viruses for 40 years. And one of the things that's amazing is that we had no flu this year. We also had no respiratory syncytial virus, which is a big, big problem for babies. And so one of the things that I think it shows is that by us wearing masks, we probably prevent a lot of other infections besides COVID. So I'm not going to keep my mask too far so that when the COVID is gone and when it becomes flu season, I might pull out my mask again, because I think it has made a difference in terms of flu and respiratory syncytial virus.
One of our grandsons, one of Sean's sons, is a MD PhD student at Northwestern. And I talked to him on the phone last week, and he said, you know what we haven't had this summer, this winter? I said, what's that? We haven't had any RSV, respiratory syncytial virus. He said, we have two wards in the hospital with nothing except RSV kids. They're empty. He says, it's really exciting.
It is exciting. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of pain and agony that we've suffered, but there's going to be some things that we've learned that are going to be helping us in the long term, I think.
How long is the antibody response going to last? I mean, are the antibodies be there forever, or what happens?
Good question. We have some information now looking at long-term antibody that it does seem to exist for about 8 months or 10 months in terms of natural disease. And we haven't vaccinated, and we don't have long-term follow-up from vaccinees yet. We also have a problem in that we have variants. We have some new strains that have evolved. And some of the strains that have evolved, like the UK strain, which is circulating pretty heavily in the United States, still responds really well to the vaccine. But we know that the South African variant, which is present in very small amounts at the United States, is about sixfold less in its ability to the vaccine to induce the antibodies. So one of the things that we will have to notice is how long will the antibody persist, but then also how effective will the antibody be with variants that evolve. And one of the real reasons we need to get everybody immunized is if there's much better control of disease, then there's less virus to grow and less variants to be made. I think we have a lot of experience in respiratory viruses that need boosters. I mean, certainly every year we have to get flu vaccine, and so that's one of the examples. So I think we just have to look at it, study it, and see how things go.
There's talk about how the children do not necessarily spread the vaccine in the same manner or fashion that adults do. I have a hard time getting my hands around that.
Well, I think there's still controversy kind of about how the role children have. I think that they don't have as hearty of a cough. And, you know, when they yell and scream, they don't have quite as much power as their 18-year-old sibling. But one of the things that I have been so excited about is the fact that if kids wear masks at school, they're not giving each other the virus. And so that's been one really exciting thing, is that with social distancing and masks, a number of the schools and a lot of the parochial schools my grandchildren go to, have been able to go through all the winter with their masks on and not get infected at all. So I think that social distancing and masking really does help. And so I think that's helpful as well.
Well, that's good to hear. That's very good to hear. The CDC told us that it's okay if we have our immunizations, that we can travel as long as we wear a mask, but we shouldn't travel. It just doesn't, it's like, is that incongruous?
I think you have to just be wise when you travel. I think you do wear your mask. I think that, you know, that it's a whole lot safer if you're going to travel to drive to where you're going. And if you're not going to drive, maybe you want to pick a time when the plane isn't packed like sardines. And so I think you just use your wisdom and practicality and we'll do okay.
Well, thank you, Dr. Edwards. We're running out of time. I'm so sorry. There's so much to talk about. Well, it's time to wrap it up. So it's been a great pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
A great big thank you to you and to our listeners. Without you, we wouldn't be here. Let me remind you that starting on April 26th, you can read my Parenting Matters column from the Epoch Times on our website, www.parenting-matters.com. Now, before I sign off, one quick story. I have a good friend who is a pediatrician and a grandfather, and he tells me this story about his grandson. His grandson, about 12 years old, had always been very afraid of shots, screamed and hollered, and he took 10 men to hold him down, and people hated to see him come to the office. Well, one day he was talking to his daughter, and he said, well, let me take him over this year. So Grandpa picked up Tommy, and they went away to the doctor. And on the way, Grandpa said, the reason I wanted to pick you up today was to explain to you how you can make a shot not hurt or how you can make it hurt. It's up to your choice. And Grandpa Tommy said, are you telling me the truth? And Grandpa said, have I ever lied to you? Tommy said, well, no, but how can the shot not hurt? Well, Grandpa said, the secret is in your muscle. If you move around and the nurse has to poke the needle through a solid, hard rock muscle that's jumping up and down, that hurts. But if you just sit there quietly and softly and relax, it won't hurt a bit. Still a little skeptical, Tom answered. Well, are you sure that will work? He said, yes, I'm sure. If you feel the muscle relax, it won't hurt. But if you jump around, which I know you won't do, is that right? Tommy said, well, I guess not. So you guess not. He says, listen, he says, this is not a guessing game. A shot can prevent you from getting sick or even dying from the flu. So listen up, sit still, relax that muscle and be a man. Got it? Yes, Grandpa, I got it. Well, they walked into the room. Big Jim looked at Tommy and said, Tommy, up on the table. Let's have a look at that arm. He had the syringe ready and he continued, okay, now look straight at Grandpa. Don't move a muscle. Tommy looked into Grandpa's eyes for a moment, then he glanced over at Big Jim, who was placing a Band-Aid on his arm. And he said, aren't you going to give me the shot? Jim said, I already did. Now, I tell you this story because so many kids are afraid of shots. But if parents would tell the truth, like Tommy's grandpa did, instead of trying to beg, bribe, or otherwise reward their misbehavior, it would be a lot easier for everyone. Now for your homework. Sit down with your family and go to www.parenting-matters.com and listen to Dr. Edwards' words of wisdom once again. Then call, text, or email your county health department and find out when and where the vaccine is available for your age group. Make an appointment, get the vaccine, and make use of Grandpa's advice. Then go back to Parenting-Matters and tell us how it went. And if there's a topic you would like to hear us discuss on Parenting Matters, let us know. We'll find an expert to tell you all about it. Thanks for listening. May God continue to bless you and your families.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Parenting Matters with Dr. Parr Donahue. Parenting Matters is produced and recorded inside the studios at the Catholic Pastoral Center. Thanks again for listening to WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming at WBOU.org.